Thank you so much, D-Don. Good to be here with you.
We're so thankful to have you. What we want to do is kind of actually get an update on what's going on in Iraq, especially in terms of this notion that you raised back in 1992 in a presentation you did with John Judge on the question, number one, of Iraq being a weapons and chemical testing ground for multinational corporations. Also, Iraq being an El Dorado waiting for the taking by any world power. And his notion of Iraq as part of an overall strategic collection of micro nation states, especially the United Arab Emirates, as part of the United States' colonial empire efforts to colonize or already colonizing this area of the world.
You have to remember, D-Don, that there was a revolution in Iraq in 1958 when the colonial puppet regime of Nouri es-Sa'id, who used to be known as the Stooge of Baghdad, was overthrown and brought to power Abdul Karim Qasim, who was a nationalist figure, a nationalist officer, with a huge mass uprising. It led to the death of Nouri es-Sa'id. He was hanged, and of the infant King Faisal. Abdul Karim Qasim confined the oil companies, British and American oil companies, to 0.1% of the territory of Iraq. And immediately, of course, he was targeted by the CIA station in Baghdad. And interestingly enough, the CIA station chief was running an asset out of the right wing of the Ba'ath Party, a man named Saddam Hussein. And on his third attempt, he succeeded in assassinating Abdul Karim Qasim on behalf of the CIA and Mossad and British intelligence. I had the opportunity to see Abdul Karim Qasim in December 1962, along with his foreign minister, Hashim Jawad, and his Minister of Justice, Yahya. He was very conscious of the fact that he was in the sights of the intelligence agencies of imperialism. The meaning of putting Saddam in power on the part of the U.S. imperialists was that they created something called the Palace of the Damned. It was a huge torture apparatus with Saddam presiding over it. The Mossad and CIA helped in creating that whole apparatus. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqi militants and students and teachers and peasants and trade union leaders passed through the Palace of the Damned. In the course of 27 years, he was their man in Baghdad. But all the time, the Iraqi industrial process was being targeted. And indeed, D-Don, it's not merely Iraq, but as you were indicating before, the whole anti-colonial revolution concentrates in the struggle against colonialism and imperialism in the Arab East. Of course, the Zionist state was deployed as the instrument for much of this, and in the late 70s, it should be pointed out, there was a document prepared by the Mossad by one of the operatives thereof, a man called Oded Yinon, called A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s.
Just for the listening ones, Mossad is the Israeli intelligence agency, similar to the FBI or the CIA.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And the document in the Strategy for Israel in the 1980s called for the fragmentation of each Middle Eastern country into its ethnic and religious components, modeled on what the former foreign minister of Israel, Abba Iban, had called the millet system of the Ottoman Empire. Now, that was a design which U.S. imperialism quickly adopted. And when you were citing that particular phrase about the Arab East and the shoreline of the Gulf being the new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. Mm-hmm. That was part of the plans that were being made. In fact, really, D-Don, every administration since 1964 had plans for the direct seizure of Arab and Middle Eastern oil. So when the wars in Iraq were part of a long-standing design. And with respect to the Gulf War, you know, one of the things that has to be borne in mind is that the American imperialists, and when we speak of the imperialists, we mean that 1% of the population in the United States that owns more than 95% of the rest of us combined, averages around 14 corporate directorships per person. It's a tiny handful of people, this ruling class. As I like to mention, there's this former president of Avis and American Express, a man named Robert Townsend, who did a book called Up the Organization. He calculated that the number of people who control what he called the commanding heights of banking and finance and corporate capital is approximately 5,000 people.
Mm.
And they're addicted to war. I mean, look, Didon, we never got out of the Depression. The capitalist system never escaped the major crash of the 1930s. What happened in the second term of Franklin Roosevelt in the New Deal, and people are not aware of the fact that in 1938, middle of the second term of Franklin Roosevelt, there was another depression in which unemployment was even higher than it had been under Herbert Hoover. It was even more devastating in its own way than what occurred in 1929. And what they did essentially was to use the priming methods of the British economist, capitalist economist, John Maynard Keynes, and they put people to work for the merchants of death. The huge growth of the industry for war began with the massive arming of the United States preparatory to Second World War. And now the percentages of unemployed were now employed in the arms industry. And the percentages that had previously been in arms were now the percentages of the unemployed. They turned it on its head. Capitalism has been addicted to this arms production like an addict needs his fix in an ever-increasing doses. The whole capitalist economy is dependent upon this waste production. They need permanent war. And they're forever looking for an occasion and an opportunity and a pretext for launching major wars of aggression and occupation and usurpation of people's resources. We have to always keep in mind that we have only about 5% of the population of the world within our national frontiers. And we have 1% of that 5% controlling more than 95% of the rest of us combined and over 70% of the global natural resources. That's an empire by any standard.
Mm-hmm.
So every time that they launch these genocidal wars, they have to talk about weapons of mass destruction.
Mm.
I mean, the weaponry that was unleashed in Iraq, in the depleted uranium, which has absolutely destroyed an entire generation with an epidemic of thalidomide-like birth deformities as a consequence, over 200,000 U.S. Gulf War veterans afflicted by so-called Gulf War syndrome arising from the use of depleted uranium, which is essentially a tactical nuclear weapon. They coat the heads of missiles and of bullets with this this depleted uranium, and it permeates the aquifer and the soil and the air, and it gets into the cell structure and bloodstream of all living creatures with devastating effects. And that's what Gulf War syndrome is about, combined with the imposed anthrax vaccinations on the U.S. Soldiers. By the way, that anthrax vaccination is a faulty vaccine manufactured by Bioport, which is one of the companies that was linked to the Carlyle Group. That's the Bushman and Rumsfeld and the people $14 billion conglomerate of virtually a who's who of the heads of the Republican and Democratic parties. But the genocidal war and the people of Iraq has been continuous since that time. Remember that in 1953, this is even before the revolution in Iraq of 1958. In 1953, in Iran, there was a nationalist movement, the Nationalist Party of Mossadegh, that was brought to power, and they nationalized the oil, kicked out the imperialist oil companies, British and American petroleum companies. And so what they did was the CIA staged another putsch, a coup in Tehran, and installed that son of the syphilitic corporal that the British Raj had elevated to be a king or a shah, and they imposed his son as the Shah of Iran. Again, the Mossad and the CIA setting up this terrible secret police, the SAVAK, that did in Iran what they would later do in Iraq. Well, in 1978, there was a revolution in Iran. I was there for 7 months in Tehran. I was very much involved in that. And the Shah was overthrown. So what did they do? First of all, for the 6 months prior to the removal of the Shah, the head of NATO, General Heuser, had set up headquarters in the top floor of the Tehran Hilton, trying to engineer a putsch that would allow a young officer's putsch to create shock forces on the ground to crush the mass movement. And they were totally unable to succeed at that because the soldiers turned on their officers and they armed the population. And the Iranian Revolution overthrew the Shah. So now Zbigniew Brzezinski, the national security advisor of Carter, met with Saddam Hussein and King Fahd of Saudi Arabia and Asaba, who was the emir of Kuwait. They met in Kuwait, and Brzezinski and Fahd, King Fahd, they instructed Saddam to invade Iran and amputate the oil-producing province of Iran, known as Khuzestan. They calculated that the Arab minority, remember that Iran is a Persian country, and the Arab minority of about 6 million people lived in the oil-producing province in the south, namely Khuzestan.
They're the workers, correct?
That's right. Overwhelming
the oil
working
workers,
class.
Yeah.
The oil workers, the most politically advanced sector of the working class, they were all in the Tudeh Party, the Communist Party of Iran, and then the Nationalist Party of Mossadegh. So they weren't taken in by this invasion, even if the Arab army of Saddam was doing the invading, and they resisted. And so now Kissinger's policy was, well, bleed them both white. So you had the spectacle of the Emirates and these corrupt feudal regimes in the United States arming Saddam with biological weapons and chemical weapons and every goddamn weapon. And the Israelis are sending arms to Khomeini because they want to create a war of attrition between Iraq and Iran.
Mm.
Meanwhile, this arbitrary little feudal construct, namely to Kuwait, which is an Iraqi province that had been amputated by Britain at the turn of the 20th century because of its oil, the Emir of Kuwait moves his arbitrary frontiers about 900 square kilometers north into Iraq, where he's sitting on the largest oil field of Iraq, the Rumallah oil field, right? And he goes and he buys this company in Alhambra, California, called the Santa Fe Drilling Corporation, for its slant or horizontal drilling equipment. He spent $14 billion on this. And guess who's on the board of directors of that company? It's Brent Scowcroft, the National Security Advisor of Bush Sr., and Robert Mosbacher, his Secretary of Commerce. Talk about it. I enjoyed the little exchange between Farrakhan and Mike Wallace about the corruption in Nigeria. I mean, talk about a kleptocracy.
it's funny and sad at the same time.
I mean, listen, the Emir of Kuwait, Didon, had $2.8 trillion in U.S. and European banks. I mean, it's a tiny 200-person feudal family. Talk about flight capital.
$2.8 trillion,
yeah.
Or billion?
Trillion. Trillion dollars, according to the New York Times.
And the U.S. deficit is what, $3 trillion?
Oh, it's much larger than that, the deficit. But to put this in perspective, $1 trillion is $1,000 a minute since the birth of Jesus. Look, what we have here in capitalism is the cannibalization of the infrastructure of our society, and in essence, it's the theft of all resources, the pauperization of the many. And we have the capacity, we have the productive capacity of the resources, not only in the United States, in all parts of the world, but in particular in the United States. We could have free food, free housing, free transportation, free education, free health care from cradle to grave, within an economy of plenty, with just the most elementary democratic control by the people who produce all value, the working population of the country.
Actually,
it's a sick system that perpetuates the starvation in the world. You know, the 2 billion people who are living on less than a dollar a day, There's nothing written in the stars about that.
And it's really not free because it's our labor that produces the tax dollars that finance this $2.8 trillion going into Kuwait or for the military-industrial complex. It's our labor that produces the surplus called taxes that finances this madness.
Absolutely. And by the way, since we're talking about these numbers, D-Don, you know, in a space of 4 decades, the Pentagon was handed officially about $10 trillion. Now, that's more than the combined value of everything produced in the United States. I'm talking sewage systems, roads, soccer fields, or hospitals, whatever, taken together. And to put that in another kind of perspective, on the eve of the September 11th attacks, the inside job of U.S. Capitol and of the Mossad, the 9/11 events, Dan Rather, on the 10th of September 2001, in his news broadcast, disclosed that in the year previous, the Pentagon had, quote, lost, unquote, $2.3 trillion. And in the year before that, they had lost $1.9 trillion. Now, how do you lose that kind of money? The guy, the man who was the general accounting officer for the a government who had to give an account about this to a congressional committee, calculated that there was $7.2 trillion of accumulated Pentagon funds without a paper trail. This is what is that? It's offshore. It's in proprietary companies that the enforcement arm of capitalism runs. All the death squad operations, all this, you know, the running of narcotics across the planet, all the BCCIs and all the rotten banks that facilitate this. This is a system in terminal decay. And you want to talk about corruption, it's a kleptocracy, this whole... I mean, literally, all the things of value that we produce through our labor are thieved by these people. Mm-hmm. The state is nothing more than the soup line, the corporate soup line for that tiny handful of obscenely rich people. There is a study just recently done. It was actually published on the 1st of November of 2006 by Linda Bilmes and Joseph Stieglitz. And it appeared in the December 2006 issue of the Milken Institute Review. These are quite distinguished scholars, by the way. They're Nobel Prize-winning economists and what have you. It was also published by Columbia University. They estimated that the Iraq War has cost $2 trillion. Up to now. Now, what's interesting about that is because Maya and I look very carefully at this report. It's a very, very important document. Over $2 trillion of cost that they document that this war is actually absorbed in cost is in fact a very conservative understatement because it's based upon an assumption that the cost of crude oil had gone up $10. Hey, it's gone up $45. Mm. You see, so in fact, it's a multiple of this. It's much more like close to $4 trillion that this has cost. And look, 144,000 of the GIs that have been wounded, 23% of them have permanent injuries. The number of soldiers in just this most recent war who have been deployed in Iraq and involved in this terrible war, 1 million. 1 million, because they're recycling them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's over 1 million U.S. Working class kids who have been put through this meat grinder in Iraq. And bear in mind that this little country of Iraq, I say little country, it is 1/10,000th the military capacity of the United States.
Mm.
Over 1 million deaths in Iraq amongst the civilian population. That is, I mean, the numbers that you've recently seen are 655,000. That's an underestimate. This document establishes that the scale of devastation in Iraq can scarcely be imagined. Even more than that 1 million people are internal refugees. This is something like 14 million people in the United States. This country has been totally devastated with radiation weapons, what they did in Fallujah, the radiation from the weapons that were used in Fallujah has permeated the entire area. They brought in huge bulldozers to take away all the soil. One of the reasons why that Italian journalist, if you remember, mm-hmm. from Il Manifesto, mm-hmm. was kidnapped, and then when the Italian intelligence figures tried to rescue her, they ambushed them, and they tried to kill her, and they killed the Italian intelligence operative instead. She had been gone into Fallujah and was reporting on the radioactive weaponry that they were using there. The radioactive levels in Afghanistan are all over the country. The weaponry they used, biological and chemical agents all through Iraq. I'm talking about the United States. They introduced something called the Old World Screwworm, which is a parasite that has never been native to this particular area. And when it when this particular parasite fastens on a blemish or a cut or a wound in a cow, it devours the animal within 5 days. Something like 7 to 8 million of the livestock were destroyed in Iraq by the United States through this means. This is a war of utter attrition and genocide that's inflicted on these people to bring them to their knees. Meanwhile, they're privatizing the entire oil industry and parceling it out amongst themselves. I mean, this is the nature of capitalism in terminal decay, and it's a war in Iraq that is not just aimed at Iraq, as we know. I mean, it's 60 countries that have been targeted in this fashion. It's the same process that they're planning and preparing in Iran. And meanwhile, with all the hoopla about the Democratic Party presumably trying to curtail the war, utter nonsense. First of all, remember something about this recent election, apart from the fact that it was hacked and much as the 2000 and 2004 elections were hacked. We could go into that in a moment. But the thing I want to emphasize about this is that in this election, 39% of the population participated in the election. And that's, when I say of the population, I mean of the registered voters, because in truth, that's roughly about, it's only about 60% of the registered voters, or the eligible voters, to put it correctly, 60% of those of us who are eligible to vote register to vote. So when you have a figure like 39%, it's really little more than half of that is actually the percentage of the voting public that participates in the election. It's much more like 20% of the population. Cut that between the two parties, it's about 10%. The vast majority of the population looks at these politicians and says they're all crooks. They got nothing for us. It's the same old, same old. They soft soap us during election time, and they sell us out the day after.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because people are dumb or indifferent or cynical or whatever. It's because they've got too much common sense. There's nothing out there for us. Nothing at all. Whatever they say, they're all crooks, and it just gets worse and worse. It's not because people are indifferent. It's because they don't see a way out. They don't see an opening. They don't see a vehicle. They don't see a program. They don't see a leadership. They don't see something that can make a change. So they're not going to waste their energy and time on these lying fakers. They hold their nose when they do vote, and they regret it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while, the Democrats have been on board for every one of these. The papers have been very clear about this. The senior Democrats are calling for a short-term increase in the number of troops, 20,000 initially. U.S. plans, last big push in Iraq, strategy document calls for 20,000 troops. This is The Guardian. That's what this Iraq study group, the latest disastrous plan, this is the Chicago Sun-Times, November 17th, more GIs to Iraq. Many of the wise people who supported the Iraq war now contend the answer to the problem is send more troops to Iraq. And the debate grows over beefing up U.S. forces in Iraq. This is the Washington Post, November 17th. The so-called Iraq study group, half Democrats, half Republicans, James Baker and Leon Panetta. Who the hell was Leon Panetta? He was the chief of staff of Clinton. Panetta brings out to Stanford at the Hoover Institute, and he brings Sandy Berger, the national security advisor, to Clinton, and he brings Gates. Well, I mean, Robert Gates, mm-hmm. This is the man who was he was CIA director before that, deputy director. He is engineering the October surprise along with William Casey and Bush Sr. You remember when they went to Paris to meet Khomeini to keep the hostages in the held so that Reagan could win the election? Interestingly enough, Didon, Robert Gates was the man, the point man for terminating many of the operatives in that. They do these things on a need-to-know basis, and then they take out the plug uglies that they hire and retain.
Okay, Rob, we're going to take calls now at 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-KPFK. And for those in the listening audience who want to get access to your books and to your website and some of the lectures you've given, Ralph, could you please give out that information for folks to contact you?
Please. People can contact us at www.takingaim.com. radio.com or at www.takingaim.info. They can hear us, you know, on we're broadcasting like we broadcast today, D-Don, at 5 o'clock New York time, 2 o'clock Pacific time. And if you have a software on your computer, you know, like Real Player or any alternative, you can go and just put the call letters of the Pacifica station in New York, WBAI, www.wbai.org, into Google, and then you just go to listen, and you can hear it live at 2 o'clock Pacific time every Tuesday.
Okay, Brother Jason, you're on the air, Jason. How are you doing, Jason?
Yeah, I had a question about how do you feel about the PMCs that are operating over there in Iraq right now?
PMCs?
Yeah, private military corporations.
Oh, yeah, of course. well, that's part of the capitalist process of privatizing and handing off. What you've got here are the goons that they usually use for strike breaking who are now being assigned the tasks of carrying out the torture at Abu Ghraib and carrying out the death squad operations on a contract basis for profit.
Yeah,
and it's a way of handing off to hired killers tasks that then absolve the government or the officialdom of direct responsibility for the acts for which they pay. But that's the nature of the operation. By the way, Blackwater, and you know who is one of the executives for one of these primary mercenary groups, Blackwater? It's Kofor Black.
Mm.
Kofor Black is one of the counterintelligence people who ran death squads. He's run them all over the world. And one of their primary areas of operation was, guess where? New Orleans, after Katrina.
Mm.
There are 70,000 of these types down in New Orleans running these operations on the working class and black population of the Gulf area, and particularly of greater New Orleans.
That's another topic, another show.
That particular operation, which is part of the war in black America, has been called out. It's called spatial deconcentration. How's that for a euphemism?
Mm-hmm.
You know how that translates.
Okay, we have David on line two.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say... all right, first of all, you know, I'm watching everything going on lately, and one thing that really bothers me, I was born in 62, but I was very conscientious even as a kid, you know, in fifth grade and everything as far as what was going on at the time. And I'm fascinated and perplexed that the people aren't getting really angry and rising up and that we're not having the 60s all over again. And my question, do you think that's because of the draft? If we had the mandatory, you know, service, do you think that things would be different now? And that's the end of my question. Thanks.
Well, first point I want to, by the way, the draft is exactly what they're now calling for. If you Charles Rangel,
mm-hmm.
Talk about a black face in a high place,
Uncle
right?
Tom, yeah.
Charles Rangel has just called for the draft, and he said that he was very serious about it, and he said, you know, whatever we call it, we're going to have it. And by the way, just for the record, I mean, the main contributor to Charles Rangel was General Electric, as he proudly proclaims. But first point, brother, is this. The disaffection and the in the country is profound and deep and widespread. The Angus Reid polls indicate that about 8% of the population in the United States supports the war in Iraq and the policy of the government in the region. 8%. People are profoundly disaffected.
Oh, Ralph.
In fact, even the established press has acknowledged that CBS, for example, has said that 56% of the population, and this was on November 17th, report that the United States was wrong ever to have attacked Iraq and had no business invading the country.
Ralph, we're out of time.
Okay, brother.
We thank you very, very much. I'll post your information up on my website at KPFK. Two quick announcements. Jerome Johnson, author of Seven Steps to Empowerment, will be speaking at a Talking Drum Forum this Friday from 7 to 10 at the FIBA Center, 5730 Crenshaw Boulevard.